CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is a beautiful Wednesday morning. It's cold as F outside. It's just after 7 o'clock. And we're at the 13th of July already. It's almost the middle of the month, which is just insane. It feels like yesterday we started this year. It's crazy. Ooh. I just want to quickly tell you about this, and then we get back to Celeste Ntuli and to Simpiwe Mthethwa, two Zulu girls. I'm in big trouble this morning. Big.
I like how you say my surname.
Oh, I love Zulu girl.
Why? How do
you
people
say my surname? You say for the. I will say this. You're the first white guy that says my surname the way that we say it. Your N is so strong.
Ntuli. You know what?
Exactly.
Like I'll get to these things in a minute, because I always think it's not difficult to just say someone's name properly. It's like the first sign of respect. You know, if you can't, and a lot of people not very talented with language, and maybe they pronounce things in a difficult way because they're just not used to those sounds. But like, you can learn to do this. And if someone's got a really complicated name, part of the fun is like getting to know how to say it properly. You know, I'm not going to judge you if you can't, but it's nice if you do. If people call me Gary, I just immediately get pissed off with them. That's not my name.
But now, listen.
Who's Gary? You're short minded, Gary.
We shot in every name in South Africa. I thought this was our thing.
At least I didn't call you. At least I didn't call you Celeste.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure there are people who call you that.
The funniest thing is, my people can't say Celeste. It's either they say Celesta or Celeste or Celeste. And then the surname is right. But white people will say my name right, but the surname is...
Do you have a second name?
Oh, Nontlantla.
Nontlantla. Okay, good name. Yeah. There we go. Beautiful.
Look at you. Mm. Okay, Gareth. Okay.
Okay. All right, so...
It looks like you dip into some chocolates for some time to time, because that can never be spoon.
Listen,
that is a bedroom language.
I you know what? In 1983, 1984, I learned Zulu at primary school, and I could say some very basic things. And I mean, I can still remember some words, and sometimes like a song will come to my mind and I can figure something out, but it's nowhere near where it should be. And then when I moved out of KZN back to Joburg, I learned Setswana, well, a little bit of Setswana. So like then that confused me again completely. But there are little things that you learn along the way.
No, but your tongue is in the right place.
Well, thank you. That's not the first time any woman said that to me.
Oh, Lord. after I said that, I realized how much it was a set up for a poor punchline.
I'm going to use that. We're going to cut that out. We're going to cut that out of this podcast. We're going to use that again. So listen to what he says. All right, so...
All right.
Let me quickly tell you about this. This is something really, really amazing and fascinating that we are able to do because of the kinds of people who we've been working with here at Cliff Central recently. And one of those people is none other than Professor Christopher Paul Szabo. He is absolutely one of South Africa's most esteemed psychiatrists. He's someone who's been lecturing. He's been working at the very edge of psychiatry for the longest time. He's published. He is well-respected by his colleagues, and he's been doing a series of shows with us, which if you don't know about this by now, you are missing out in a big way. Second season already. It's called Beyond Madness, and Professor Szabo has been talking to colleagues of his. This is like a high-level conversation that the rest of us would not normally be privy to. It's not the kind of stuff you can... talk to your average fall out of the tree psychologist or therapist about. This is really, really involved. And we've talked about such interesting subjects on this show. So here's this week's, and it's really quite a tough one. Have you ever had a loved one with a chronic condition, suffering? There's no prospect of recovery. This person has spoken to you of wanting to die and wishing for an end to their suffering. And we talk about this in such controversial terms in the world now, because some people believe it's completely morally wrong for anyone to decide to end their own life. Other people say it's the most humane thing you can do. And there's not a lot of ground in between those two. What if it was legally possible to grant someone that wish? There are countries that allow it, for example. But this week, on Beyond Madness, there is a controversial issue being discussed, assisted dying. They'll talk to Prof. Willem Landman, they'll talk to Dr. Chris Verster, and to Professor Sean Davison. In proud association with Adcock Ingram OTC, the sponsors of Brave. And I got to say again, well done to Adcock Ingram for getting involved in this too, because it takes balls to work on topics that matter, to discuss subjects that people actually care about, and to know that you're treading into territory where people are going to have very polarized opinions. It's a very brave thing. They're sponsors of Brave. They know what they're talking about here. But this is going to be a fascinating episode. You want to watch and listen to Beyond Madness with Professor Willem Landman, Dr. Chris Verster, Prof. Sean Davidson, and Professor Christopher Paul Szabo. It's all going to be happening in this week's edition of Beyond Madness. Don't miss it. So, Celeste is here, and St. Pew is here, and we've got Professor David Block talking later on to us about the amazing world of this new telescope, which is being revealed. But before we get to any of that, it is worth discussing, and I'm glad that we've broached this subject entirely by chance. We were talking about Nhlanhla Lux just now. Let's just talk about the secondary economy that Celeste raised just now. And we've got, obviously, a lot of tension in a country like South Africa where there's not a lot of money going around. There are not a lot of jobs. We know unemployment's probably our biggest threat. We know that people have to make ends meet. We know that this informal economy is not something that the government can help us with, because they don't even know how to tax this economy, and that would be their first priority, because all they want to do is take money out. But it's also very, very difficult to manage, because it's disintermediated. It's not controlled by one person, right? I mean,
Why should it be? I guess that's another question.
It definitely shouldn't be. And that's why when people say, do this with that economy, do that, it's not up to you. It's up to the individual people all over the country, dotted into small rural and township and kind of excluded areas. And it's up to them to run their business the best way they can. Offer the prices people are willing to pay. Try and get the goods that are of a quality that the people will approve of. And make ends meet. That's all it is. You don't have to control that. It sorts itself out.
I think South Africa, we are in a position where there's a lot that is wrong. You know, we have a lot to fix, basically.
Yes.
But I think we shouldn't use one specific issue to make the rest of the other issues escape their responsibility.
Right.
We have this issue of black people in the township losing their economy. This is, for me, solely responsibility of the government.
But how do they get involved? How does government get involved in this?
Number one, when they started to have malls in the township, like in my hometown, the mall is owned by a white person somewhere, whom, when there was riots and looting, took his time to say he's going to fix it because it's his mall. But I'm like, that mall killed a lot of businesses around the township. Right. Why couldn't it was, if they want to regulate the tax, go to the people who have this butchery, small tuck shop existing, and say to them, how can we assist you and making sure that we find you to get a mall? I mean, we grew up with such tuck shops. And I understand and I get the point of the Tutula operation. But my point is, that alone could not fix all our problems, because our problems are not solely linked to these particular foreigners that are only on tuck shops and Zimbabweans. I mean, when we say foreigners, who are we really talking about? Because since this has started, nothing that goes to the China Mall, for example, that killed a lot of black people's economy.
Well,
but no one wants to talk about that. The China cities killed a lot of black people's economy. They even have replicas of designers, South African designers, who are trying to make their ends meet. They're being replicated in China City, China Mall.
But that's,
okay. I'm not saying all of this must lie in one group of people.
Sure, but you have a simple choice at the beginning of any such conversation. The first choice is, are we going to have a free economy where people get to decide what they want to buy, when they want to buy it, how much they want to pay for it? Or are you going to have all of this controlled by the government? So this is classic kind of centralized control versus free market. The free market is something that doesn't require government. People will pay what they want to pay for what they want. So if they want the fake Chinese goods, that's the market demanding it. You can't tell them must buy this stuff, because the minute you can't tell me I need to buy this phone as opposed to another phone. I'll say I want that phone, and you can't. Yes. I don't want government involved in that decision. So obviously that's part of it. The other thing is, if you have a centralized economy where the government make the decisions, look at how badly government has made all the other decisions in our lives. The reason I'm sitting here in the dark right now is because of government and their cuck decisions. So if we gave them the power to decide what phones cost or what label designer is allowed to sell in what area, can you imagine what a disaster that would be?
But the thing is, the Chinatown exists, but every day we see all these mamas who are trying to sell by the side of the road being kicked off. So it's like, for me, black people want money, guys. Like, I don't think people
Everyone wants money.
In a sense of just to make a living. Mm. If people will have their toilets, their hospitals, police station, everything working, no one will care who's stealing whatever millions in the... Whenever they talk about these millions, it's money that we've never seen. We know for a fact we will never, ever see possibly in our lives. That's not our major problem. Our major problem is our day-to-day living. My thing is that eventually this thing is going to go back exactly like the Nkata and ANC.
Oh, so you mean...
Me seeing black people fighting together is a problem for
all right,
me.
But...
Because I'm a dark-skinned girl.
Yep.
I can easily be a Zimbabwean when the shit hits the fan.
Right.
So I'm very sensitive about that.
So this is then revealing something about our character as South Africans. It's more, and this is more scary. This is much more difficult to discuss than economics, because if we're just talking about mamas on the side of the road who are trying to sell their stuff, then obviously the last thing we want is for the police to be harassing those people. If people are coming from Zimbabwe, from Somalia or from wherever, because they see opportunities here and they are able to do a better job than we are, then we have to look at ourselves and figure out how we can be competitive. And that's a tough thing to answer, because if we make special rules for South Africans, then we're not really an equal society. And if we treat foreigners differently just because they take advantage of opportunities and put themselves in often very difficult and dangerous and hardworking conditions to do a lot more difficult a job than we're prepared to do, then that's on us.
I guess that's what I'm saying, that the issue is there. The issue should be discussed. I'm not saying everyone is wrong or whoever, but I'm saying it's a critical one, because it leads to death. It's easier for most black people to kill other black people, because that's like, yeah, let's
horrible.
Kill all these people.
But that's,
the
that's...
killing on each side. Already they started saying the tavern killings are by foreigners.
Yeah, and this is going
to
happen.
There's no proof to this thing.
Yeah, it's
going to
happen.
But it's going around like that. And that's a very scary thought.
Yes.
And it's a very scary...
Yeah, I think the issue here is that they put in color with foreigners. You know, a foreigner is a foreigner is a foreigner. But the minute you start saying, but you're only a foreigner because you're black, is the biggest issue. Because that's been...
Okay,
not looking at, that's why they bring up the whole, like, but there's people who have China City, for example. But there's also a lot of people that are European, and that's still a foreigner. That's still very much a foreigner. So I think that's where the danger is.
So Celeste said just now that the people, you know, the white guy who owns the shopping mall in a rural area. Now, it's possible for anyone to open a shopping mall in that area. You've just got to take the risk. And the risk was proven last year during those riots, because if you were a shopping mall owner and you had built a shopping mall and then a whole lot of people descended on it, raided it, broke it down, looted it, destroyed it, that's on you. You took that risk. You can make the profit during the months when it works. But when that kind of thing happens, it costs you an absolute fortune. And you do say to yourself, well, why should I build another shopping mall there? The fact is, people want to go to the shopping mall. Otherwise, they would be buying from the street vendors. They want the shopping mall.
I guess my thing is, when we talk about foreigners, let's count that guy in. Because the whole thing of calling foreigners people who are dark-skinned, that's where my problem is. I grew up in that space of Nkata and ANC riots. That thing is more like you are closer to Rwandan genocides.
Right.
When you start going to say the Zimbabwean this, but, hey guys, me I'm
but we know like, we know that we know we've got this very complicated relationship with race, and we've got this very complicated relationship with xenophobia in this country, right? And it is largely, I mean, like, you'll find, for example, the average Zimbabwean finds it very difficult, even if they've got a specific skill set, even if they've spent a lot of time in this country, they may have spent more than 20 years here. They still have trouble fitting in some places. And then we have our own people who are saying very often, no, I don't have a problem with foreigners unless ... So it's almost like, well, you're okay, and we're more than happy to have you here, my brother, my sister, but then as soon as things aren't going exactly the way that we want them as South Africans to go, then we've got a problem with them. And part of our problem is that we like to other each other. We like to say, you're not from here, or you're white, or you're black, or you're Chinese, or whatever else. So that is an us problem. That's not a them problem.
But the problem is, most people, when you say to them, okay, foreigners, let's have white people go. No, we need white people. Because there's a subconscious thing that we, and it's something that we need to face as black people.
Mm.
Whenever people talk about, we can't stay by ourselves. If you can see that with white people, see it with other foreigners. You can't select and choose and say, these foreigners are investors. Because every white person that comes into the country is an invest. That's where my problem is.
Some of them are
not. Fix this problem.
Some of them are just...
Let's, of course, my sister's got two husbands. They were not here because they were for investors. They were here. They got our wives. No one beat them up. I've got French in-laws because everyone understood that they are from France.
Yeah, but again,
you know what I mean?
You know, if this is the thing of other. If you other people, if you consider that someone is different to you because race, gender, sexuality, country of origin, then that's a you problem. That's not a them problem. They're coming to South Africa like anybody's allowed to. You're allowed to come into South Africa. And by the way, it's not like our government are able to stop people from coming into the country illegally.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's on planes from Europe or from China or from anywhere else, or whether it's on, across the Limpopo River. We mustn't differentiate between those because it's the uselessness of the government that has resulted in illegal immigration.
I guess that's where my point is. Mm. I think... I have a problem when now this has become, it's slowly brewing to an EFF versus Dudula. And I'm like, where's the ruling party? Well, where are the people
apart.
That created all this mess? When are we pointing towards them? You know what I mean? Like, for me, that's where I am. I think we must also get into a point in South Africa to understand that we can discuss these things by people not calling me and saying, Celeste, because she's speaking to Gareth, she's a better black. I'm not better black. I'm just saying the
and
truth
also,
and what
Celeste,
I feel.
Why don't we also realize that, like, if people are buying from the supermarket rather than from the street vendor, that's their commercial decision. So if I believe, like, you must support the local butchery. I believe you must support the local person who's got a small shop. Because but that's a difficult thing for you to do because you now have to go to five different places rather than just go to one place. And as consumers, we have to make those decisions because we can't blame the shop owner. We can't blame the mall owner. We can't blame the person who's picking the fruit. You have to blame yourself if things aren't going the way that you want them to go. You want to support the local economy? You help those people. If you know someone who has a butchery, go to them and support them, even if it's 5 kilometers extra.
And I guess that was my thing to say, if there could be less violence and more mental decision. Like, I make it my point to make sure that I work with as much as black people in my space and whatever that I need, from designers, makeup, whatever I need. I try to look for black people. That's my motto because I understand our economy issue. All I'm saying is,
you do see, though, that saying that, you're othering also, because then some Chinese person who can offer you a better service maybe or can do it cheaper for you saying, oh, well, why can't you use me?
It goes back to the choice that you said I had. It's my choice.
Okay.
So I'm saying if we can make that a choice rather than to say, let's beat this one, the energy
violence. But then you mustn't no foreign national is going to get your business is basically what you're saying.
It's my choice.
Right. No, you can do that.
All I'm saying is, it's my choice because I understand what I'm trying to contribute towards when it comes to the economy that we're talking about.
Absolutely.
My contribution is to make sure that the people that look like me, that come from me, because I understand our plight.
It's got
nothing to do with the next person.
No, sure.
It's got everything to do with
the understanding. But that is a kind of othering. Like, I would... I don't think about that when I buy from somebody. I like to support small business owners, whether they are Pakistani, black, white, Indian. I don't care, because I want people who do a good job, but I want to support the smaller guy just because the big ones are going to make money anyway, and this economy needs all the help at the bottom that it can get. So maybe we're on the same page.
We are on the same page. All I'm saying is I deliberately go for people who've suffered like me because I understand. It's like saying people like to say we are the community of this. When you start loving yourself, it doesn't necessarily mean you hate the other person.
Yeah, I got you. I agree.
You know, Indian people have been doing this for years, and they're doing it till now. They make sure they look for an Indian person, and it's good for them. Mm. You can't say they're othering you. There are a lot of things that are involved in making this thing. Number one, I'm a big girl. Whenever I look for a stylist that doesn't understand my body, we have a problem. And I know I've had this problem.
I would be a terrible stylist for you.
you know what I mean? And people take it, whenever they see me, they see African prince, which is I don't have a problem with. But this, I'm not a face of an African prince.
Yeah.
You know, which is now I go back to saying, let me go to my girl who will understand where I come from, who will understand who I am. As much as I'm a Zulu girl, this is my vision. This is where I want to look. This is where I am. I'm also a superstar. I want to look in a certain way. It has a lot to do with me saying, why will I go outside when there are people within my range that understand what I want? Of course, if there's a white guy out there with something nice, it doesn't necessarily mean that I won't buy it. But I'm saying, I deliberately make a decision to make sure that I go to my people because I know what they need. If I don't contribute, at least let me do that. You know what I mean? I'm not othering the others. I'm just saying.
Simpiwe, you get the last word on this, and then we're going to hear about the world outside of our stupid nonsense here on planet Earth, because there's a whole universe. There's a whole universe beyond us, which is much bigger and much more exciting than our little battles. I still think that if the aliens heard us bickering about bullshit like buying from foreign nationals, they'd just laser the hell out of the Earth and blow us up.
Yeah. Well, for me personally, I think we're just seeing the manifestation of what our government used to say all the years when everyone would ask them, what's the problem? No, but you see the apartheid regime, and you see it's because of apartheid. And now you have the everyday man, when they're upset and mad, they always look at race. Like, that's the issue, is that they can't look at things to say, what happened? What went wrong?
But it's not just race. They also look at they want to blame somebody else, always.
Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm. It's never me, but it's never my decisions, it's never my money.
But it's the leadership thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because our leadership always did that, mm-hmm. The everyday man is like, oh, so when Zuma was blaming everybody else for everybody else's things, I can do the same. And now that's what we're seeing happen with the everyday man saying, yeah, but it's you, and it's never me, or what can I do to change the situation? So until that changes, guys, it's just going to get worse.
That is so, you are so right. No, you're spot on. I mean, and the whole reason we've got this problem now is because the borders are pretty much open. You know, whether you're flying in on like the Gupta's wedding plane and landing at Watercliff Air Force Base because you've got connections, or whether you're coming across the border with just your backpack from Zimbabwe, like that's the same problem. Nobody's looking after the borders. Anyway, let's move on, because our borders are completely artificial and everything about our life on Earth is kind of ridiculous when we look out into the stars. And the person who helps us to figure out what's going on outside of our planet, the person who's looking at the big picture, and now, thanks to a new telescope, is looking at ever clearer and more beautiful pictures, is none other than Professor David Block. Now, he's no stranger to the show, and everybody knows and loves Professor David Block. And I saw a tweet of his just the other day that, in fact, it was yesterday, Prof, that he put this out. He said, why the excitement? Well, I'll tell you why. And he put up a picture, which I'll share with you in a moment. Professor David Block, how are you, sir?
Oh, it's wonderful to see you this morning. I've reached you sitting here in the dark at home. So thanks to a restaurant nearby.
Oh, yay.
I can see you live. And I'm looking up.
Well, Prof, we're very glad that you are at a place where you could connect with us. And I'm sorry you had to get into your car and drive around this morning just so that you could be part of our show.
It's a pleasure.
But it's very special to have you on the show. So tell us why we should be excited about this new telescope and what it shows us that we haven't seen before.
Gareth, that's such a brilliant question. You know, the detail is absolutely, in one word, astonishing.
Hmm.
We are looking back around 13.6 to 14 billion light years in time, and suddenly, in a tiny swath of the sky, you are seeing myriads of galaxies being born shortly after the Big Bang event some 14 billion years ago. Oh, but Gareth, there is more. There is so much more. What's terribly interesting is this. If you look at that image, you'll see pink-shaped arcs all over the image. And what is happening there is that light from these distant galaxies is being bent in cosmic space and in cosmic time to create these glorious arcs around these galaxies. It's the most incredible view of the embryonic stages of our universe for the first time. We can see in the greatest of details stars being born far away, galaxies being born still in their natal stages. It's as if the universe at that stage was pregnant with baby galaxies, with wow. baby stars. It's awesome.
Prof, this, when you talk about this stuff, it just strikes me how much you love what you do. But this telescope, tell us about the genesis of this telescope and why it's so much better than the Hubble. Why do we have such levels of clarity? Is it further away? Is it superior technology?
It's everything of that. The Hubble Space Telescope, Gareth, had a mirror around 2.4 meters across, around 100 inches in the L system, whereas this is 6.5 meter mirror, but there's much more. In this case, so in other words, it's the world's largest space infrared telescope, by far, much bigger than Hubble. Also, the mirror is not one solid piece. The mirror is broken up into 18 segmented petals. And so the technology was so advanced that they actually folded the entire mirror system up to launch the JWST, the James Webb Space Telescope, into space. And then behind the moon, they opened it up into one gargantuan big mirror. Wow. It's astonishing technology to align. Just imagine to align two such petals, but to align 18. Also, not only is it much bigger than the Hubble Space Telescope, but it's much further from the Earth, and it's sort of shielded from the Sun behind the Moon. So it can operate in very pristine conditions with its much greater mirror, with its much greater light collecting area. It can start showing you the very natal, coeval stages of stellar birth. It's like this, Gareth. I feel this morning like a stellar gynecologist studying heavenly bodies.
So, Prof,
that's the truth.
We've got the very talented Celeste Ntuli on the show with us this morning. And Celeste grew up in rural KZN. And one of the things about growing up in a place where there isn't a whole lot of artificial light is you see more of the stars. And this is true for this telescope as well. Part of the reason that we can see so much is what you've just said about the fact that it's behind the moon. So there's less of the sun's light, which is polluting those pictures. We get to see a lot more detail. And that's true for people who live far away from cities, right?
That's absolutely right. I mean, in days gone by, there was a famous observatory at Wits called the Yale Observatory in Yale Road. Why could they set up an observatory? Why could Yale University set up an observatory in Yale Road? Mm-hmm. Well, the reason was the skies were pristine. It was dark. Johannesburg City was in its infancy. What kills astronomical observations are city lights. And that's why on Earth I have to travel, for example, to Hawaii or to very remote observatories in the Atacama Desert in Chile. I have to go to the most remotest places on Earth to be able to get away from the pollution. Now, you've got 2 points here. We've got pollution, the Earth's atmosphere we have to contend with. Here, the James Webb Space Telescope is exactly that, Gareth. It's a space telescope, which means we don't have to worry about moonlight. We don't have to worry about huge starlight coming through the atmosphere. Think of this. We never, ever have to worry about a cloudy night. You know, I might travel halfway around the world, yep. and it might be cloudy, and then I right. can't see a thing. But there is no cloud whatsoever, of course, in space. And so for many different reasons, and specifically to get away from bright sunlight, it's so crucial. Do bear in mind, Gareth, too, this is an infrared telescope. It's different to the normal optical telescopes. It's primarily an infrared telescope, which means that it can detect these incredible rays which have traveled for so many, many, there we go, billions of light years. That's the image. Now you are looking some 13 billion years into time. Notice those arcs everywhere. Light from distant galaxies is bent around a foreground cluster, creating those gravitational arcs. An effect predicted by none other than the genius, the legendary Albert Einstein. It's a confirmation of so much. But Gareth, I suppose what captivates my spirit this morning so much at this restaurant is that we are so focused here on the smaller things and very important things,
yeah.
sitting in the dark. Here we are literally, by means of the world's most sophisticated telescope, seeing details which we could never, ever have imagined 20 or 30 years ago.
It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Wow. Celeste and Simpiwe, I'm sure you've got some questions for Prof too, but I just want to quickly reiterate this point that I think is really important. We're not just looking far into the distance, Prof. We're also looking far into the past. I mean, this is probably the furthest we've been able to see
yes.
with our eyes
oh, yes.
in terms of looking back
yes.
in history, because some of those galaxies that we see in this picture that I just put up, some of those are probably already extinguished. Some of them are probably already dead. There are stars there that are no
yes.
longer in that position.
Yes. I think that's so interesting that in astronomy, we are always looking back in time. You know, Gareth, every time I look at the sun, I'm not viewing the sun as it is now. I'm viewing the sun as it was 8 minutes ago. I'm looking back 8 minutes in time because light traveling at 300,000 kilometers per second in vacuum takes 8 minutes to reach your eye. So if the sun had to die in place this second, I would only know about it in another 8 minutes time. That's
wow.
the sun. With these galaxies, we're looking back 14 billion years in time. So yes,
wow.
these galaxies are now, of course, if we could see them, would be very mature adults. We're not looking at the baby stages. Many of the stars in those galaxies might have already exploded into supernovae. That's the whole wonder of astronomy, is you're not only looking back further into time, but you're continually able to go further and further into the past. It's like looking back, it is, in fact, looking back in history long before the Earth was ever formed.
Well, Prof, I really appreciate you going to the trouble of getting to a restaurant with internet connection. Celeste Simpiwe, over to you. Have you got anything you want to ask the great professor until we let him have his coffee this morning?
I'm going to ask such a lame question. I grew up in
yes.
rural areas and we will see the shooting stars. We
yes.
always believe that we are lucky that day and we'll say all our wishes. Are
yes.
we, is that a myth or is that a real shooting star?
Is that what?
Is that a myth to say when you see a
shooting yes. star? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Of course, shoot, it's lovely. I think it's part of the human psyche. I think
yeah.
it's part of the human imagination to want
yeah.
to look up and to want to connect your dreams with something heavenly. I think it's
yeah.
grounded deep within our souls, this is not for that connection, that higher calling, as it were. And I think that just a little story, you know, wish upon a star, you know, wish upon that twinkling star. Of course, it's a scientific myth. You can't wish upon a rock. I mean, a shooting star is none other than a tiny little piece of rock. But it's part of that sense of wonder placed within us.
Yeah.
Awe placed within us. That we are born not to look down and to worry about looting, as important as it is, but we are born to try and connect with the bigger God-given universe out there. It's extraordinary. It's magical. And when you say, I see that shooting star from that rural area, you want to connect. You want to see your dreams realized. You want to live with the touching interface of your dreams. You want to be born for a brighter tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
I love how you speak about astronomy. Like, literally, I just want to shut up and let you listen. Like, I want to listen to everything.
You're too kind.
One last person. Yes. You've been saying that we see the future, we see the past at the same time.
Yes.
What is, if one is interested, like to literally, even if it's not study to be a professor like you, but to have a better and a bigger understanding, what is one thing that does to us when we have that understanding of the other galaxies? Of course, other than to understand that we are just this minute thing in the whole earth.
What a lovely question. You know what it does to me? Yes. Mm. You know what it does to me? It sets me on fire. You know, with Eskom, I'm very aware of the lighting of the candle. Very aware of the lighting of the candle. Very aware of the lighting of the candle. And these images light my candle to such an extent that here I'm sitting at a restaurant with people around me and my candle is blazing. My candle.
Yeah.
That's what it will do for you. If you look at some of these images, you might not understand all the intricacies thereof, but it lights your candle. You are born to love. You are born to dream. You are born to use your intellect to think in the dark to the light.
Oh, thank you so much, Prof. Thank
beautiful.
You so much.
Like,
thank you, Gareth. My day is made.
I
you don't understand
so.
How much I love this one.
Lovely.
So, thank you, Prof.
Thank you so much. Thank
Great
you.
To see you. Thank you, Professor David Block. And
he's
know he's the best. He sent me a message yesterday. He's like, why aren't you talking about this telescope? So I said to him, well, Prof, I don't know anything about it. So we got him on at the last minute, and well done to Darian Simpiwe for getting him on the show.
Amazing.
What a great guy. And
amazing.
He's so, you know, he's the most enthusiastic person in the world about what he does. And it just reminds me, like, if anybody doing anything, whether your thing is air conditioning or growing plants or selling the citrus fruit that the Europeans won't let us sell to them anymore. And if you just love it, if you love it like he loves astronomy, people are drawn to that. People just, they find it so attractive, you know?
His passion is just great. I literally wanted to just listen.
No, he's the best.
Because how he speaks.
No,
I mean, I didn't even know what telescopes does. And what, it's the first time hearing all this information, but... Mm. He took me somewhere, and he's such a great storyteller.
Isn't it wild?
That's why I love OGs.
Yeah, isn't it wild to think that when you're looking at those images, like this one here, that you're not just seeing far away, but you're also seeing way back in time. I mean, 14 billion years is such a big space of time, if you'll pardon that pun. It's such an enormous quantity in terms of numbers to think about.
Yeah.
Now, someone said to me the other day that if you just thought of your life in seconds, right, and if you consider, like, time is a great way to figure out how big a number is. So if, for example, the human life in seconds, I'm just going to look this up because I don't want to get the numbers wrong, so that you could see how – so we live approximately in your life, you'll live – 22 million seconds. That's all. That's all you've got. Just 22 million seconds. So if you think about, like, a billion seconds would take you in a human life approximately 31,688,222 days. Sorry, 222 seconds. I mean, that's just an enormous, enormous number. If you think about how long that would be. A million seconds is 11 days, a billion seconds, 31 years, a trillion seconds. You know, there are people figuring out, I think I gave out the wrong number in the middle there, but that's essentially something that it's too big for us to consider. If you think about 14 billion, that was when the universe was born.
Wow.
The Earth only came about some 4 billion years ago. So for the first 10 billion, there was no Earth for us to live on.
Wow.
It's extraordinary.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, well, I'll find that seconds thing, because there's a much more tidy explanation than the one that I tried to give you off the cuff just now. It's very hard.
But
to
even the 8 minutes of the sun minute that you were talking about is very interesting. To think that I'm looking at something that has already passed.
Yes,
8 minutes ago.
Yes, that's amazing.
Really? Yeah.
Right.
It's crazy. I thought I'm looking exactly what I'm looking at. Like,
Steve says, suddenly I don't feel so old anymore. The universe is 14 billion
years old. Yes, you're quite young.
Siabonga says, Prof Block, he's so awesome and has a great sense of humor. Prof, I still wish upon a star when I see a shooting star. I think a lot of people.
We used to spend our summer nights literally searching forward, because it was summer nights are beautiful in the rural areas, because the skies are clear, the moon, even the sun, even if it was blazing hot, as the sun set, you just want to sit there under the tree. So that was our thing. Like, if you've seen a shooting star, you're like, your whole day or the month is made.
Shame. Prof had to go to a restaurant nearby just so he could have internet so he could talk to us this morning. So, see, people are going to trouble to make things happen. Load shedding affects everybody, even the great professors.
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
So, Carl
I woke up.
Carl says, Gareth, I sometimes think you're pretending to be bad at numbers, but you really fucked that up, lol. Yeah, I did. I tried to make sense of it in a second, and it didn't make it. I would need 5 years to figure that out. Go ahead, Celeste.
That's why you're a broadcaster, not a mathematician.
It's all right. Oh, my God.
No, that was a very nice and eye-opening thing. I saw something very interesting on my way here on the internet, that Germany was announcing that most of the pilots that were vaccinated are not fit to fly.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Now, the ones that couldn't vaccinate, of course, they decided not to. They were let go of. So now they have an issue of vaccinated pilots who can't fly.
Well, I know that
how interesting is that?
In South Africa, it was not mandatory for the pilots to get vaccinated, and most of our pilots are back up and running in the jobs in the airlines that survived, and I say that advisedly, because obviously some of the airlines don't exist anymore, and some of them are kind of half there and half not. That's why it's so expensive at the moment to fly. But look at this, talking about vaccinations. Mm-hmm. So New Zealand was the most vaccinated country in the world, right? 95% of people there are vaccinated. 75% of people there are boosted. They've also still got a mask mandate. And look at this. Here's something that just proves what a stupid set of circumstances all of that is. Deaths in New Zealand are once again as high as they've ever been. This is yesterday. With over 95% of the eligible population fully vaccinated, 75% boosted, and a mask mandate. Just goes to show you how easy it is to control COVID with interventions. And then there's the chart, which shows you, if you look at the end of it there, this is where it spikes suddenly. That is February, March, April of 2022, and it's just gone to a new record high in July of 2022. Well done, New Zealand, Jacinda Ardern, you morons. Look, made no difference. Your stupid vaccinations, your stupid mask mandates, your stupid boosters did nothing.
They're still dying. This is crazy.
Well, those are not deaths. So those are the infections. Oh, no, sorry. Those are deaths. Oh. Those are deaths. You're quite right. Yeah. Those are daily
The black graft?
The black line is daily deaths. Deaths.
Oh, Lord. Sure. Oh, Lord.
Kind of spiky. No.
Mm-hmm. So well done, New Zealand. That's great to see. Again, Jacinda Ardern and her stupid government thinking that they had the solution. Do you remember everyone was praising them at the beginning of COVID because they had the mask mandate and they locked down and they kept everyone out? New Zealand is an island. Obviously, it's two islands. And they decided they're going to keep everybody out. And that was how they were going to stop themselves from getting COVID. Well, it didn't help, did it?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, Lord. And that's why I didn't want to be an ambassador for vaccines. I've always said, I don't know. Do what you can do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because now there's a my friend from, because I was in Dublin a couple of weeks ago. The airports are filled with people who can't, you know, those European countries that are the poor Europeans.
Yes.
The Polands and the.
Yes, exactly.
And all other type of Europeans. There are the people that are literally at the airports, booking and flying. The English is broken to all the UK airports. I was like, wow, okay, you guys are not from here like me. The English is broken because people, like you say, the airlines lost a lot of employee staff and a lot of revenue, and most of them are closed. So there's so much vacancies when it comes to airlines and traveling airport work.
I don't know if you fly a lot because you're doing shows all over the country, but are you doing a lot of local flights, and have you noticed how much more expensive that's become?
It is. I was in Devon. Hugely expensive. It's crazy.
Oh, you're in Devon.
No, no, no. I actually went on a Sunday for the comedy show. There's a comedy picnic that I was performing at Shembe Comedy Picnic on a Sunday. But I know this because I do
Shembe Comedy.
No, no, Simpiwe Shembe. Simpiwe Shembe.
Oh.
Well, he's a family. Definitely family. We make jokes about
him. I thought you meant the church. I was like, oh, that's you.
No, he's from the church. He was born. He's born from the church. Like, he's a comedian. Yeah, but he's a comedian. But that's his family. We always laugh whenever he's about to pay us. Please don't pay us with the Vaseline. Give us the proper check.
Yeah, because we were talking about this with Pumi Mashiko on Thursday last week about the Shembe Church and how it's the second biggest church in South Africa. And they've got millions of people who are members of that church and who follow. And you say that he's the family. He's actually from that family.
Yeah, But he's a comedian as well. Like, sometimes he goes, whenever he performs, the Shembe thing comes to him, and then he finds himself preaching.
Inspired.
In the middle of a comedy set.
Oh, wow. Well, listen, Celeste, while we're talking about you, because we've only got a couple of minutes left of the show, so have you already prepared all your stuff for the Kanye Mbau roast? Because I'm looking forward to hearing what you have to say about Kanye.
I've been working, but I know for a fact that I want to avoid those typical skin jokes. I mean, what else are we going to say? She's pink. What else do you have to say? Like,
I'm blacker than Kanye Mbau.
Of course. Like I said, she's like Cape Town. She avoids the fact that she's South African. Oh, no, I want to be white. I want to be European. Let me go and stay in Dubai. No, I think more than anything, Kanye Mbau is one of the artists that I feel like I wish we see more of the acting part sometimes, because it's easy to roast someone because based on their work, you know.
Don't go say nice things. Don't go. You're meant to be. Meant to be a roast. I mean, come on.
I don't want to be nice. I'm not gonna be nice. One thing for sure, I'm not gonna be nice. I did the roast with Jeff Ross. I was nice. Yeah. I got fucked.
Now you've led. Now you've led.
Oh no, I've learned my lesson. Dylan Oliphant killed me. Said when I hop on the scale. You remember when Zuma was still a president?
Yes.
So when I hop on a scale, the scale says 1,500,000. The crowd went crazy.
Ah, that's great.
So from that joke, I know for the fact that I must kill or be killed.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, we were talking about assisted killing. Assisted death.
Yeah. Is that what you're going to do? You're coming for everybody now. Guns blazing. Hey.
This is the thing. I haven't done a roast in South Africa, period. And I haven't done some of the roasts because I was like, I'm sorry. There's no way. I'm the king of comedy. And there's no way I'm going to. Now that this one, the Roastmaster, is pop-ups, I'm like, okay, now we're talking comedy. Because another thing I think about South Africa, don't understand the roast. It's a roast. I must say this now. It's a roast. I don't want no woke feminist on Monday coming up on me. It's a roast.
I'm telling you.
Right.
Mm. It is a roast. People can say whatever they want to say. Like, I like that in this age of cancel culture, to be on the roast, it's the most beautiful thing, because it's like a freedom of expression. Once again, they're going to say shit to me, I'm going to say shit to them.
Right. No sacred cows.
No sacred cows.
fortunately or unfortunately for me, I'm not that much of a controversial person.
I don't know. You you can
you can guns blazing. We don't know.
You can get in, the ring with the best
side
of them.
The never seen.
I do think it's brave of Kanye Bao to do this, because I think a lot of people who get roasted, it takes a certain amount of confidence, because you know people are going to go for all the obvious things. They're going to go for all your faults. And having been involved in the Somizi roast, I know that you put yourself out there, but you've got to kind of accept that whatever people are going to say is going to be hilarious, and it's part of the fun.
But the thing is, the nice thing, that was brutal.
Mm.
The Somizi one.
It was great.
You guys went in.
It was great. Yeah,
but the nice thing is, they're going to say it once.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Like, Gareth, if people say to you now, oh, Gareth is racist, how many times have you heard that? I'm sure I don't even want to go there with people.
But you know what? That's the funny thing, right? It's like once someone has said the worst thing that you can think about, then after that you stop caring about what those people think. Unless they really are people who you respect, and unless it's something that you feel is true, and it's a part of your character you want to change. Like, otherwise, it's like, you're going down that street again. I've been there a million times. I don't care anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's like people come up to me and talk about being big, and that's, I'm like, try something better.
Exactly.
You know?
That all you got.
Go somewhere else.
That's, yeah.
So, all I'm saying is, no feminist movement whatsoever. We're going in. This is life. This is the roast. I'm going in. There's no way I'm going to also drop the ball. As the biggest comedian I am,
yes,
Netflix, and try
come
to make
on,
people.
Love.
No,
there we go.
I'm not. Died in my life. I'm not dying on that stage. That's what I'm saying.
Oh yeah,
so I'm going in.
I love this from Siabonga. Says, "Preach, Celeste, preach. Woke activists, stay away from the roast. Absolutely.
Yes, stay away. Stay away.
All right.
Because I'm gonna go in. This whole thing of Celeste and Kanye, you are both women. Hey."
No, it's a game.
Yeah,
it's gonna be women
after
the roast. After the roast, when we're having the champagne, now I'm gonna be like, "Yes, Kanye, what's up?"
Yeah, well, exactly. And you know, the funny thing is, like, people think that just because you disagree with somebody, or because you're employed to make fun of them in a roast, that now you're gonna hate them afterwards. I mean, that's so childish. It's ridiculous.
No, I've never hated, and that's another reason why I'm doing the roast. I don't hate it. Why should I?
No, of course
like,
not.
There's no hate yet.
No.
I don't think she even, you know.
And
so,
Kanye doesn't
come down.
Kanye's putting herself out there because she's not afraid. Tremaine says, bring Celeste back. Well, she's see, already they're calling for more.
I told you I'm going to take
she's
over.
She's taking over.
Central is coming.
Celeste Central. Yes, I see that. Yeah. Look, she's put Central.
It was a mistake. You did that on purpose.
Celeste Central.
She took away the clip and was just like...
Celeste said to me at the start of the show this morning, she said, I only came into the studio so I could charge my phone.
Yeah. I was load shedded. I was like, damn. At least I need to charge. Let me go, Gareth.
I love it.
They said she's got an engine. He's got an engine. And you know what? We're going to start speaking like Nigerians now because of the load shedding.
Yes.
Everyone has been wondering why Nigerians speak like they're shouting. It's the generator.
Yeah, because you have to shout over the generator.
That thing is so loud.
Every community has generators. You start chanting.
In the background the whole time.
Correct! Can you borrow the salt?
What are you going to do in this? Why are you talking so loud to me all the time? I love it.
Yeah.
All right.
I have to tell you guys this real quick.
Yeah,
so
go.
My sister lives in an estate, and it's basically like omunye phezu omunye type of vibe. Mm. And she's telling us that there's one house that has a generator, and because that thing is so loud, all the other houses can hear the generator on. So they called like a bit of a meeting, you know, to say, guys, your generator is making too much noise during load shedding. Please fix that. Fix that. We can't have that kind of noise when everybody else is in the dark.
Oh, right. Listen, everybody, have a happy day. And we will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. bright and early. Be good. Celeste and Dooley, thank you so much for being part of the show. We love you lots.
Thank you so much. Catch me on the roast and catch me on my show, Money and Men. Mm-hmm.
There we go. Do it. Don't miss any of that stuff. It's all fantastic. See you tomorrow, everybody. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. CliffCentral.com